Hello and welcome to the Hologram Radio Show. I'm Cheryl.
I'm Ash.
And we're Hologram, the band.
The band and the team.
The Hologram team. We're the Hologram team. And today is January the 11th, 2015. And we are doing our show that I mistakenly tweeted last week that we were doing on the 4th last week. And the show's called, do you remember, Ash?
10 Things I Want to Know About You.
Yeah, so we're kind of taking a leap from one of our favorite movies, 10 Things I Hate About You.
And we are doing 10 Things I Want to Know About You.
That's right, we decided to drop the hate.
And we've never been able to, we've never done this. I had this idea before.
Yes, you did.
But we've never interviewed each other, ever.
Well, I interviewed you, actually, on December 16th, 2010. I did an interview because that's when we first met in May of 2010, and I interviewed you because I wanted to have a bio for you, because as you know, in December of 2010, you were being recorded in our studio, the studio that I had with my ex at the time. I wanted information about you. I didn't really even know much about you as a musician, as an artist, so I interviewed you. Huh. And I'm bringing up some of these questions from December 16th, 2010.
Really?
Yeah, see? Weird. I've hung on to them for 4 years.
That's very strange.
And
kind of creepy.
Why? You probably even forget some of the questions that I asked you. Because I remember that you were kind of surprised by some of my questions. You didn't know the answers to some of them. So I've got some new questions for you, and I've got these other ones that I want people to know about you.
Yeah, I got 10 questions right here. I'm ready to ask you some stuff.
You know what's really hard is, 10 questions, man. I mean, I find that each of my questions has about 5 questions within the question.
Yeah, me too. And so I tried to keep some of them kind of funny and lighthearted and some kind of deep, and I just decided that I've known you for 5 years, and that I know mostly everything there is to know about you, when you were friends with somebody for that long, and
work with somebody and write songs together.
But I still got excited to write some of these questions, to think, I wonder what she's going to answer.
Oh, wow, I'm a little bit nervous.
No. Well, you go first. You ask me, okay,
why,
folks?
Why?
Okay, fine.
Why do you want me to go first?
Okay, I'll ask you first.
All right. So another thing we asked is, originally we were going to do this show live. We've actually had to pre-record it because we have an event that we have to attend. And so we are pre-recording it. And if there's anything that we get through social media, we will add that to the at the end of the show. We'll add if any of you are interested or expressed interest in knowing something about us, we'll answer them at the end of the show.
First, or we'll answer personally.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
Yeah, we'll definitely answer them, unless they're an outrageous question that isn't coming from a place of true curiosity.
Yeah, good point.
yeah.
Okay.
It's all about intention.
Everyone ready to have some fun?
All right.
Know some more about us? Come on, we're going to record this. So these are answers.
That's
that are
right.
Gonna be, okay.
Go out into the universe.
Well, my first question for Cheryl is actually really, really cool. because they all are really cool, but I am really interested in what people kind of makes people tick, or what makes people passionate. And my first question for you is, what current in capital letters, musical artists do you find most similar to you in regards to politics, drive, and passion, and why?
PDP, politics, drive, and passion.
Yeah, which current musical artist do you find most similar to you?
Politically,
and passion.
I mean, my politics are very much anti-politics.
And that's a good thing.
So, when it comes to politics, I'm really not a fan. I recognize the need, the way that our current society is set up and our world system is set up, that we need some semblance of order in terms of a government. However, I'm feeling very strongly that we're needing to have more, less leaders, in more, you know, and I don't even like the word democracy, and you might say whatever. I'm not a communist or anything, but
I'm on the same page.
The word democracy doesn't even make sense to me anymore. I honestly feel that, how do I talk about an artist in terms of its politics? A lot of artists don't share their politics because things that aren't expressed.
Just an artist out there nowadays that wow, that's pretty cool. I like what they're doing.
Well, one artist actually that came up, I was having a discussion with a really close friend of mine, and he was talking about Macklemore. And I'm going, you know what? You're right. Macklemore's cool. Now, Macklemore's music, I mean, we as DJs play a lot of Macklemore because Macklemore is pop and mm-hmm. pop friendly and kind of, you know, I don't know, it's that one of those cross kind of genres where it's pop and it's got a bit of hip hop in it, it's got a bit of rap in it. But I appreciate his politics because he's one who is embracing mm-hmm. so many things that most people stay away from. Most people don't want to mm-hmm. talk about uncomfortable topics. And Macklemore seems to be quite open in that. So based on my discussion with my friend and my agreement with him.
Your answer is Macklemore.
No, but only for politics. Yeah. But in terms of music, I don't have his albums.
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
You're not big into
it. No, but as an artist, as you know, who has influence because he has a lot of record sales.
That was the question, just politically. But,
no, you said passion and drive.
Passion and drive, but
there's two different things.
Okay.
Now, in terms of passion, who's the most passionate? I think a lot of artists have lost passion. They've forgotten about passion. I think it's more about the business of music. So when you go towards finding passionate artists, it's in the indie scene. That's honestly what I feel. It's in the indie scene. I feel that a lot of the big labels and the big label artists, they've lost sight because they've had to. Because they're put in a position of the business of music. And it is a business. So it's tough for artists to kind of coexist with the business of music and the passion of music. Now, who do I think is passionate right now? Currently passionate or past? Because a lot of past artists come up for me.
Current.
Current passion.
That's why I wanted to ask this question.
That's
because
tough, man. Because
something that is around now that people can...
Well, who can... People can be inspired by?
See, I can answer these questions for you.
No.
But I'm not going to.
I don't want you to answer them for me because we've had a lot of discussion. Obviously, we talk about music a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, in this moment, honestly, I think probably the most passionate artist that comes to mind for me, and I had the pleasure of meeting her, is Patti Smith.
Cool.
And I think the reason being is that Patti has gone through how many generations? She started in the 60s. She's still going strong.
Yeah.
And she's always been about the people, always been about
question. She's playing more shows soon.
Yeah.
Too, yeah. In Portland,
so,
I think.
So if you want to talk about passion, I think Patti Smith.
Well, thank you.
And then drive?
Yeah.
Driven? Madonna.
Yeah, that's true. There you go, Madonna.
I think Madonna and Gaga probably have the most drive.
There you go.
Madonna, definitely. She started as a dancer, and she wanted to be a singer, and man, she made it happen.
She did, and it was awesome.
Yeah, so there you go.
All right, you. Ask
your
me.
Question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'm ready, everyone.
Since we're talking about music, I want to talk about you as a musician. I don't want to talk about what your favorite thing is yet. I want to ask you this. Okay, as a musician, I want you to describe your personal journey from childhood to now. For example, share a bit about how old you were when you started, who taught you, who were your influences, what was it like or is it like still to be part of the Riot Grrrl movement as a solo artist?
Okay.
Just talk about your personal musical journey from childhood to today.
Well, I'm going to try and keep our answers a bit brief because we do have 20 questions to go over, but I will give a little bit. So that's really, really tough, but I'll kind of give the short version because how can I really give? And by the way, Cheryl and I don't know the questions we're going to be asking each other.
No, that's
so,
why
yeah,
we're just kind
it's all
of...
surprise. Okay. So, for me, I was definitely a jock kid and I loved football and I was quarterback and I just loved to play sports. Then I got an injury. Both my hips slipped out of their sockets, and I almost died. So I was forced to be in a wheelchair at the age of 11. Yeah. So then I found music around that age, too. I was really into punk rock and Green Day. And, I mean, I'm not talking like American Idiot. I'm talking like the first two records, like back in 1990. And back in 1990, anywhere from 90 to 94, I was just super into it. Like, I was really young, and even though I'd kind of heard it before, I really started to get into it.
So punk was your first influence?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the Beach Boys. And, yeah.
That's like two sides of
I love the Beach Boys. They were my first concert. And then I just basically started playing guitar. I started writing songs just out of nowhere, just started happening. Met people at school or on the internet back, you know, when the internet was like AOL and ICQ and all of those things. Met a few different players, was in a few punk rock bands. Then I went solo and started doing a real like acoustic kind of act for quite a while. Put out an EP, which was a real treat for me because that was the first thing I ever put out, and I went to, where did I go? I think I went to Tacoma, and my friend Courtney Trouble, she's an awesome photographer, and she took a picture of my first EP was a picture that she took in the snow in Tacoma. And,
what was it called?
It was called Urban Rain EP.
Okay.
And, then it was just after that, just the, you know, finally just really started to play lots of shows, met a woman named Trigger who just put me out on the circuit in Vancouver. And from then on, it was just meeting people, writing new songs, playing with other, you know, bands, and being in other bands, and then stopping when I got really sick when I was about 22. I had just had the opportunity to play lots of shows, finally. I put out a first full-length album called This Time I'll Forgive You Again. Got really sick from a form of birth control I was taking. Ended up in the hospital. And stopped music for a while due to a whole bunch of reasons, but then it was found again just before you. I played in a band called Glory Whore for a while,
mm-hmm.
and then there was you, and I formed Hologram, and here I am on this radio show.
Tell me, as part of that question,
yeah,
what was the first album that you bought? Do you remember the first album you ever bought?
Oh, okay, so this
as a kid?
Okay, this is actually, you can't quote me on this because I had previously thought it was something else. So the very first album I actually bought, it wasn't a CD because it was tapes.
It was tape? Tapes. So you got it on tape?
It was tapes,
You didn't get a vinyl copy?
No. I didn't have vinyl when I was really young. So when I was really young...
What was the first tape you bought then?
The first tape I bought was probably Sharon Lewis and Bram, but once I finally became really into music, I had got Green Day's... 1039 Smoothed Out Happy Hours, and that was really cool. I thought it was just amazing. And then I had gotten the very first Rancid tape at the Vancouver flea market, and that was a bit later on, but I bought it on tape, and that was still like one of my first tapes, and I thought it was awesome. And then Nirvana Bleach, cool. I had that on tape. I don't have it anymore. But there you go.
Awesome. And eventually, Tim from the Rancid.
Yeah, that was a highlight. Tim from Rancid calling me on the phone when I was just practicing my guitar before band practice.
Here you are. You got his tape. Then he's phoning you.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That was really cool.
Well, thank you
yeah.
for sharing that
thank
quick
you.
Journey.
Well, you know what? There's so much that I just... That's just kind of like me
I
in
know,
a nutshell.
Scratching the surface,
yeah, for
I know.
People who kind of like just for a bit of a history. And so actually my second question was the same as the first, but it was what past musical artist do you find most similar to you?
Past?
Past. They have to be in the past,
meaning
no longer
they're
no active.
Longer active? Well, it's interesting because a lot of my past artists that I really identified with are actually still doing it. Which is a testimony to them that mm-hmm. that they're still active. They're not they haven't become kind of redundant in any way. So what when I'm saying that, I'm thinking about Kate Bush. I'm thinking about Peter Gabriel. I'm thinking about Tori Amos.
She's just rocking it now.
Yeah.
You got it. You actually, seriously, I'll show you some YouTube links. Look up Tori Amos 2014. Like, she's out there covering PJ Harvey, The Doors, Nirvana, and she's making it sound amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And those are people that I've been interested in their lives as well. And I find that's the way I am as an artist. It's not just about the music. If I'm interested in the music, then I need to know about the artist.
Yep,
and so I find out about the people, because I want to know about the people and why they're creating what they're creating. What are their life experiences? Mm-hmm. I'm quite fascinated by everyone. Like, what makes us tick and what makes us as artists create? And yeah, so those are the, I mean, there's tons, man. I mean, I'm just thinking, because this is on the spot, and it's been a long day.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm a little tired, so things aren't coming to me as quickly. But, yeah, I mean, I like some old that might be considered kind of cheesy to some people, but it doesn't matter to me because they're not to me. And I would say bands like Asia, Frozen Ghost, Squeeze. I mean, there's some really cool bands back in the 80s and 90s that I really dug. Like, you got into the punk rock movement as a kid. Me as a kid, I got into rock. I was into rock, and then I was into I really loved these kind of glam bands, and in the like a lot of harmonies, I just loved a lot of different music, the blend of the voices, the blend of the instrumentation. And I always have loved, back when I was in university, I was in love with classical, I was in love with Rachmaninoff, and I loved anything with the harpsichord. So I just kind of
That's
have
cool.
a real very
You're very eclectic.
Well, it's just, yeah, I love classical. I love Rachmaninoff. I love just listening to, oh my God, the piano, just amazing. And the harpsichord, and maybe, and Celtic music. I mean, I've just got a real, as soon as I hear something that has like a Celtic memory or a melody, it's like my memory, something is like, this is where I think I really truly believe in past lives, people. And I just think that there's some connection there. To something that is familiar to me, but I don't quite understand why, but it just resonates. So, yeah. I think music is pretty overall passion for me. It's a passion. It's a passion.
That's really cool.
So, past, I don't know if I answered your question. Because a lot of the...
No, you did.
Like
you
I
did.
Said, a lot of them are still current, so...
Yeah, no, I love it. That's cool. Great.
All right, so you ready for yours?
I am so ready. I love learning more about my friends.
Isn't it awesome? All right, this is off the music. This is something I thought the people would like to hear, because
oh,
I think it's really cute. When you and I are crossing the border into the United States of America, what do you tell the border guards when they ask you, how did you meet and how do you know each other?
That's so funny. Okay, I'm petrified of border guards. Now, reason is, I am petrified of, like, seriously, I don't look like the church-going type. Let's just say that.
She's always covering up her tattoos.
I'm covering up my tattoos when I go
through the border.
That's because Andrea and, seriously, okay, I was going to a show at the Rocker Girl Conference in Seattle in 2005 with Andrea Hector.
Andrea Hector Brown.
Yes.
She's married.
Who is amazing, amazing bassist. Who played
artist.
On my album, by the way. She played bass tracks
She's
on a few.
Great lady, too.
So great. And Daryl, her drummer. She got asked to play the festival, too, and I got asked to play the festival. And I didn't want to, when my drummer was not legally, couldn't legally get into the States, and one of my other musicians was underage, so she just had the idea, why don't her and Daryl just be my backing band? We were playing
Good
at the
idea.
Cafe. Yeah, we were playing at the Cafe Vita. So they learned my songs and we did it. It was great.
Cool.
But they had told me, make sure you cover up your tattoos. And I said, oh, okay. And I didn't have any hand tattoos at that point. I didn't. Like, I have my knuckles tattooed, my hands, my neck, right? Like,
Now.
But before, I even just my arms I had tattooed. I think I had one. I had this the heart on my hand.
Okay.
Because I don't think I had the riot. No, I didn't have the riot on my knuckles yet. So anyway, I thought, okay. And she goes, no, seriously. Cover them up. So I said, okay. And we couldn't even tell them we were going to play a show. Like, we had to tell them we were playing, like, a 50th anniversary. Because they won't let you across if they know you're going to be playing somewhere and, like, being given money. I don't think we were. It was volunteer.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was all about the Rocker Girl magazine. They had a, you know, Rocker Girl, basically their final hurrah, which was my favorite magazine, which was insanely an honor to go there. And they asked me to play. Anyway, so now when I get, you know, we're crossing the border, Cheryl and I always tell them that we met at church.
And it's not a lie. It's true.
Yeah, it's actually true. We met at, like, but it was like a psychic church.
You know, exactly. It was a spiritualist church. And, yeah, I find it interesting because, okay, so my question, it's again. Funny. What do you tell the U.S. border guards when they ask us how we met and how we knew each other? You said we met at church, and how did we know each other?
And she's my best friend. I say that every time. Every time.
She's my best friend. How did you meet?
And we met. She's my best friend. Oh, yeah, where'd you meet? Church. And they let us freaking through, okay? They do. They never say, oh, what church? Or, hmm. They're like,
I know,
oh.
I'm waiting for that one day that they're going to say, what church?
Inner and garden,
then,
okay?
And then they might change their minds because it might not be politically correct.
Yeah,
it's not,
exactly.
It's not a traditional Christian or Jewish synagogue or anything.
Yeah.
All right, so your question to me now.
Oh, I'm so excited about this one, okay? Here we are. Are you ready for this, everyone? Well, this is actually kind of depressing. Was there ever a point in your life that you decided to turn away completely from being a singer? I was curious about that, to think if you ever put that down.
I did. And I'm just trying to think about the exact circumstances. When I was younger, when I was a teenager, I was involved. This is how I started, actually, in music, because I started in the Christian rock scene. And I was going to a church that was very musical, known in Vancouver as a musical church. Some big names there who are in the industry would go to church there. And it was called Broadway Pentecostal Tabernacle. And I was attending, and I was involved with the music there. And I got involved with a couple bands. And one of the bands was, I believe it was called Cornerstone. One was a folky band called Elam, and it was me and another girl and a guy singer. And then the other band was a Brock band, and that was Cornerstone. And that's the band that I actually played the peony at with. And that was the highlight for me. I was about 17 years old, and I think there was about 10,000 people at least at that time. And it was a real rush for me as a performer. Very green performer. But anyway, so that kind of got me. I always knew as a kid, when I was young and I used to have my daydreams or whatnot, you know, how you're in your room and you got your books and you got your sayings, mm-hmm. you know, your surrounding, and you're thinking about what I do want to, you know, you have these visions of what you're going to be like when you all grown up. And mm-hmm. I was always envisioning myself on a stage and singing. Mm-hmm. And I started singing at a young age. I was in choirs in school and stuff. And then I became a teenager, and then life circumstance, my life changed. I became pregnant, I got married, and even though when I was married and I was young, I was trying to maintain, like I let go of the bands, I let go of all that stuff. It was like my relationship became the priority. And I was still taking some singing lessons, I remember, back then. And I was working with a Russian couple, and they were teaching me classical lessons, which was quite cool. I got to have some classical voice lessons. But it was different. It was more kind of a hobby. It lost its, it's almost as if it got a little bit tarnished for me, that it was something that, okay, now I'm a wife, now I'm a mother, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm going to be, and that's what I'm going to do. And the singing took a back seat. And so I actually did put it down, you know, even with my lessons, and that was my way of kind of trying to still feel that it was a part of my life, but it wasn't in the same way. It's like I had to put the dream down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, because of life circumstances. So there.
That's neat. Well, we've all been there, but I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
See? We learn, people.
See? You know someone, and then you don't really know them, so you ask them some questions.
Exactly.
All right.
All right. I'm ready.
You're ready. Okay. Now, this is a spiritual question.
Okay.
You and I talk a lot about spirituality, right? We talk about, you know, just general life spiritual. You know, what do we call God? Is there a God? We have a lot of these conversations. Mm-hmm. Now, we talk about authenticity and transparency. And we've talked about this on the radio show as well. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is this. How transparent are you, or do you believe yourself to be? And what do you personally feel that transparency is?
Hmm. Wow, you come with some good ones. I'm just like, what songs do you like?
Well, I don't know. I think your questions are
well,
good.
Well, here's the thing. I used to think I was a lot more transparent, and it's not really fair to ask me that now. I believe that I try and always be very attainable to anyone who I can help, or anyone that I can, I'll just say help, because even in any of my circumstances, if somebody can learn something from something I've gone through, I'm totally open for sharing that. Mm-hmm. I am super, super, super guarded now. I am still transparent in the same way in service. Like, say if one of my students needs me or one of my students.
And you're open.
I'm always, mm-hmm. I share whatever and however much I feel is safe to share mm-hmm. with people, because obviously, you know, I don't want to share everything with people, but you know, there's certain students who have come to me with issues that I'd either gone through or that I know people who've gone through them and that I can help. And in that way, I'm very transparent, super, super transparent. I'm always ready to extend my hand. But I'm also extremely guarded, more so than I've ever been. I think I'm also more antisocial than I've ever been in my life, and that doesn't scare me, and I'm happy with that. So, to me, transparency, you were asked what it is as well.
Yeah.
To me, transparency is a luxury, and I think that it is an insanely scary, vulnerable thing. And I think to really feel transparent and to feel like you're giving authentic transparency, it should feel both exciting and a bit scary. So to me, that's what transparency is. I, like I said, have been more transparent in the past, but I'm comfortable with my level of transparency married with antisocial behavior. Does that make sense? I love my students. I love my friends. But I...
You love as, your family. As an,
like, here, I'm going to be super real for a second. The thing that I've been struggling most with more than anything right now is my empathic stuff. Like, being
how
an empath.
How sensitive you are, yeah.
Yeah. I can't handle it right now. I'm having a really, really rough time taking on a lot of other stuff that's not mine. So I'm trying to probably, you know, close myself off willingly, and more so now than even in the past few months. And it's nothing to do with me in my life. It's just I feel everything. And so that, to me, has been the hardest thing. So transparency is a cool thing you asked me about. And no, I am not as transparent as I used to be, but I think that it's an exciting thing to be transparent.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For the lovely answer.
You're welcome. That was for you. It was a gift. All right, everyone. I just got a text from my dad. He's watching Cheryl's dog right now because we had to do a job today. And him and my mom are watching beloved Molly.
Yes.
And so anyway, he just sent me a text. And I just love that dog. Love your animals, people. Yeah. Okay. So here's a good one, okay? This is actually boring, but I want to know this, because on our website, if you'll go to hologram.com, holo-gram.com, we list, you know, the different jobs we've had. And there's just a huge list on Cheryl's, right? And so my question is, out of all those jobs, I really don't have any slightest frickin' idea what your favorite and what your worst is. So I want to know your best and worst job you've
ever had. Out of all the jobs I've ever done.
The absolute most excruciatingly horrible and the best.
So you're talking about ever since I first started working when I was 11.
Well, been right from 11 to now.
Now, I my brother and I were raised by a single mother, and so we didn't have a lot of extra income. And so I started working, I started earning money because for me to have anything, you know, for example, I bought myself my first bike with my babysitting earnings. And I started at 11, and there was this babysitting course that you had to be 12 years old to start, but I just was very, can you please let me in? I really need to work at 11 years old. And so anyways, I took this course and I became a qualified babysitter because I had a certificate. And I used to really actually not mind babysitting. I liked kids. But then I went through a phase where I didn't like kids at all. And I thought I would never have them because I thought, oh, they're just terrible. I remember, I don't know, I think I was in my teens. And I just thought, oh, what's, you know, kids are terrible. Mm-hmm. So I went through sort of a love-hate thing with babysitting. And that was my first job. I used to do odd jobs for my mother for whatever company she was working for. For example, she used to work at Trev Dealey Motorcycles. Fred Dealey in Vancouver was the original. He had a Harley-Davidson dealership that his son, neat. Trev, took over. And my mom worked for Fred and Trev. And they were in the office, and I remember I would do letters. I would stuff envelopes for them.
That's cool.
For the Harley Davidson guys. Those are just some of my kid jobs that I can remember. And I actually would do the same thing with my son when he was younger and I was working at a Live magazine and we would be doing stuffing envelopes, and it just took me back to when I was a kid. I got my son involved. Anyways, that's an aside.
That's cool.
That's not even answering your question, but that's just pertaining to work. So the worst job, I think the worst job, I've been a chambermaid in a hotel on the downtown east side, and I'd say that was up there. And it's not because it was the saddest too. There was I saw a lot of things as a result of working at that hotel, and just the depth of despair, and. Yeah, you can't describe it unless you're actually around it and you're seeing how these people are living. And it's not even living, it's survival.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to, you know, me having a fairly at that time kind of normal life because my then partner, he was managing the hotel. So that's how I got to. I was helping him initially. And I, you know, I had my son and I had lived in my, you know, Steveston townhouse, and I had a fairly lovely existence. And to be there, I had probably one of my most some of my most poignant conversations.
Wow.
with people that had, you know, had to prostitute themselves because of their situation, or had, you know, or who were alcoholics and couldn't or wouldn't get out of that way of life because they couldn't see another way of life for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent, it was really interesting. I mean, it was really sad too. There, you know, there was a couple there that had a suicide pact. I mean, this is how, it was dark, and they actually slit their wrists, and they didn't want to put blood on the carpet, so they put their wrists in their motorcycle helmets so the blood would collect in that. And these are the kinds of stories.
Did they die?
No, they were found. Actually, my partner, he found them, and he got them into the hospital, which thank goodness. But that's the kind of stuff.
Wow.
You know.
Intense.
And then Marlena Dietrich's grandson lived there, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, she's a big movie star, and he was there, and it's just interesting how. You just realize that we're all so similar.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't judge anyone based on what you think their circumstances are.
Agreed.
So I'd say it's not because of the people that job was hard for me. It's because of the the way I was feeling. Like you're just talking about empathy. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, it was also the best in the same way, because it was real.
Yeah.
It was authentic. It was transparent. You know, I'd have these really wonderful moments with some of these residents and just be real. It mm-hmm. was beautiful in that, but it was also, it's very sad. It makes you realize how much pain and despair there really is in the world. And it's not mm-hmm. even across the world. It's in your area,
yeah, exactly.
in your city.
Yeah.
Best job was doing the radio show for CL Radio in Richmond. And also, I loved my Alive job.
Cool.
Yeah, working for Alive. And I was promotions manager, and I got to travel a lot. That was hard. At first, it was exciting. Then it got hard. But I had a really cool job. Like, I had a really great responsibility, and I loved it. It was fun.
That's awesome. I like to know things about you.
And being a teacher. When I was teaching, that's another great job. I used to teach like you. I taught modeling and personal development. I loved it because I taught
that's cool.
children up until, you know, adults like you.
Cool.
And I loved it. I like teaching.
Yay.
Yeah, there
Yay
you go.
For teaching.
Answering your question. Okay.
Thank you. I like that one.
So, yeah, so see, look at this. You ask me one question, I go off topic and answer more than you even ask me. But it brings up all these memories.
Definitely.
So thank you for asking those things. Okay, so talk a little bit about your education. Let's talk about we talked about you in terms of your music, but what about what you wanted to do? Talk about your post-secondary education and a little bit about what your initial dreams were in terms of what you wanted to do with your life.
Well, my parents were very, very awesome and sent me to private school. My mom actually, she paid for it right from the time I was in kindergarten to the time I was in grade 12, and I'm forever grateful for that. I really had a great experience being in private school. Most everybody I knew, aside who people from who went to my school, had a negative experience. So right from the beginning, I'd always had a positive experience, and I'm very grateful for that kind of more secluded high school experience. And then going from that kind of shaped my post-secondary education, because I had decided first that I was going to take a year off and do the music. I ended up taking, from the time I was 17, because I graduated when I was 17, to the time I was 20 off. Because when I was 20, I was doing my album, and I was starting to teach music. So, what I did, though, post-secondary-wise, is I went to Emily Carr, and I did writing at Emily Carr, which is a really amazing school. And then I decided I was going to go to BCIT, so I did like communications and call center work there, got a diploma, really loved that course. So I was going to be working in a call center, not because I didn't want to go into more, let's say, I don't know, I'll just use the term again, secluded. Like, to me, it was a really, really secluded job to just walk into a place and sit on a phone. Because for me to even talk to any customers, it just didn't really feel, it didn't feel involved enough for me for some reason. And now I'm talking about being antisocial and I like it, but back then I worked at a few places after the call center course. So those are the only real, that's the only real education that I've got is the kindergarten to graduation, then Emily Carr and BCIT. I definitely recommend both schools. I think they're both amazing. I had to drop out of Emily Carr to do the band stuff. I couldn't finish my course. So I didn't get certified or anything in writing, but I was very excited to go and take the classes. And I have nothing else to say. My education is every day, I guess.
So when you were going to Emily Carr, my question was, what was your intention with your post-secondary? So you went to...
None.
Were you thinking that that was going to make you... did you want to be a journalist
or
something?
Well, I thought that and then the BCIT... Like, writing is my life. It was my life ever since, you know, I really got into music. So, let's say from 12 on, I really started to get affectionate towards writing. And it would just be writing however and whenever I could. A lot of poetry, just all poetry. And then I just thought, yeah, you know, maybe I could get a job like at a you know, writing for a column or something like that. But
do you still want to do that?
No. I've lost a bit of my ambition, but I sound like such a depressing schmuck now. I'm antisocial and having a hard time feeling things. But no,
I've lost my ambition.
Yeah.
So, that's not true, though. I mean, it's not a representation of you, but it's currently where you're at. Because I was looking over your answers to me given December 16th, 2010, and I'm going to talk about those, too.
Oh, good.
But not right now.
Do you actually have them?
Yes, I do. They're right in front of me.
Wow.
I have all your answers.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you ask your questions to me now.
Okay.
And then I'm going to talk to you about the past versus the present four years later.
All right. So my next question is actually really cool. It still has, like, I'm really fascinated about you as a musician. So this is another, like, I really enjoy, this question could be a bit selfish because I really enjoy knowing what other artists are into.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes me feel a little bit closer to what they were going for or their purpose or what inspired them to create something that is inspiring me, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, what I said, okay, if you could pick four musicians, all from other bands you love, to make up your dream band, which musicians would you pick for each position? That means you need a singer, a bassist, a drummer, a guitarist, and even a keyboard player if you want to. And you can be in this band too, but you have to pick four.
Other than me?
Past or present, yeah. Yeah, this is awesome. And it can be, like, past or present. Like, if you want to keep it present, keep it present.
I'd want my dream band?
Yeah.
That's hard.
I know.
That's really hard.
But these are all meant to be on the fly.
Okay, so I'd want Jimi Hendrix on guitar.
Duh.
I'd want Kurt Cobain on guitar and vocals, because I love his singing. And I love his playing, because it's quite different than Jimmy's. I think they'd be kind of cool together.
Yeah.
I'd love John Lennon. I love his guitar playing, but I'd love him on piano.
That'd be cool.
And obviously, his vocals.
Yeah, why not?
Jimmy's vocals. I mean, they're all vocalists, too. And it's hard, you know, just picking one. I want a 20-piece band. If I got to pick, you know.
You need a drummer now.
I need a drummer.
And it could be current.
Yeah, well, I love Dave Grohl. I love Dave Grohl's drumming when he was in Nirvana. I always really thought his drumming was impeccable, and I still do. I prefer him as a drummer than a guitar player. Not that he's not a bad, he's a good guitar player, but I prefer him as a drummer. Then there's the classic Pete Moon, who was just such a heavy drummer. And Pete Moon was so cool because he just surrounded himself with a sea of drums. And I think Pete Moon on stage would be awesome. Like to have him on stage with you with his drum kit, with his, like, it's like he's got 10 kits in one. Mm-hmm. That would be something else. So, yeah.
Good band.
Yeah.
Who is the bassist, though?
I'm thinking about bassist. I mean, Paul McCartney's known for being a really cool bassist, but I...
Easiest answer ever.
What, Mike Starr?
Yes.
Well, now I...
Mike Starr, Alison Chains, best bassist.
I was thinking about past. Now, Mike, of course, has passed away, too, but he's more current, right? Because Alice in Chains. Love him as a bassist. Love, love, love him. But Paul McCartney's pretty good bassist, too.
Yeah, he is. He's
Peter Steele.
Oh, yeah.
Good, like, brr, like, driving.
Does he play bass or does he play guitar?
He's a bassist.
Huh. Neat. Well, I like your band. I'd come see you guys. Play live, sure.
There you go. On the fly, I'm sure there's tons of other people. I mean, I've never liked picking, because
I do.
No, you know why? But that's why you and I are different in that way. Because I'm more like, I just think there's so much greatness in so many people. It's hard to pick one. You know, it's
really tough. Meant picking the bass. As opposed, okay,
no.
She's talking about picking. Okay, I get it.
I have music on the
brain all the freaking time. Okay, we have
people.
We have 15 minutes to get through the rest of our questions. We can do this.
All right, so I'm gonna ask you some of these questions that I asked you 4 years ago, and I'm gonna compare the answers that you
are you recycling them because you're lazy?
No, because I've always thought this was fascinating, okay. And it's not because I'm lazy.
I'm kidding.
I think it's interesting to see how much you change in 4 years, it too, is. Right? And I think the people would be interested in knowing
you're so damn organized. Holy crap!
Who you were 4 years ago?
I can't find a sheet of paper that I had. Okay, go
I knew where it was around. I didn't know exactly, but I found it. Anyway, so here is my question to you today, and then I'm going to tell our listeners what your answer was in 2010.
Okay.
What's your favorite movie?
Empire Records.
Back in 2010, it was Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I love that one! Empire Records, Pee-wee's... Okay, yeah, that's definitely top five, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
All right, what are your life influences?
Mexican food. Mexican food, but my stomach's been... See, I turned into such an, like, a total, like, non-fun person.
That's not true.
Yeah, you know, I can't really eat Mexican food as much anymore. I'm 30 now, and I'm kind of turning into, like, a cream of wheat kind of tea kind of person. So I don't really eat a lot of crap anymore.
You're so young. 30's nothing.
Okay, so...
So you're saying Mexican food are your only life influences?
The ship.
Oh, yeah, well, that's current. That happened recently.
I like boats. I like California. Yeah. I love the city. I love music and mixtapes and tattoos and animals and my parents and my friends. There you go. Okay.
So then you said your life influences were Mushu, which is your cat.
My beautiful angel.
Farm Sanctuary and Liberation BC.
See? If only I was a strict vegan still. those things do mean the world to me, and I've desensitized myself in a way that I don't belong to those groups as much as I would like to anymore, but that is coming back, so, yes. Yeah.
So I'm just reminding you.
Yeah, that's really
great. It's like
really
you're kind of coming full circle. And I also asked you at that time, what was your largest life influences? Like, what is the biggest thing that you want to be in your life? How do you want to influence others?
I just want to heal people, and I want to help people and inspire them.
That's beautiful. You want me to tell you what you said then?
Yeah.
This is I'm quoting you because I wrote it down word for word. To be an example of how to live peacefully, being the essence of peace, who I am in my diet as a person, nothing I do to cause harm in any way in my eating, loving, treading upon the planet with very lightly, you said, treading upon the planet very lightly and leaving it better than when I got here. That's what you said.
I feel the same way exactly.
Ago.
I just haven't been as good of a example as I would have liked to be, but yeah.
But this is good, right? Because
that's really cool.
Because this is kind of, you know, so you're the same person mm-hmm. and you've had different experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're kind of coming back to going
there. I still feel the same. Oh, yeah. There. Yeah, especially treading lightly and definitely. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Nice, okay. Well, you kind of did five questions in one.
I know.
But that's cool. Okay, so I'm going to just ask you two then, okay?
All right, sure.
Okay. So here are two. Okay, so here's one, two completely different questions, but seven. It's a hard question, but I want you to pick one song lyric. And I'm saying it can be, you know, one stanza.
I already got it.
That defines you in this moment.
This lyric has stood out to me for the last, probably, since I've been actually performing the song, in the last 7 years. 7 or 8 years.
Hmm. I know which one.
Yeah, because this is, stands out so much. It's Trains, Calling All Angels, and it's in a world where what we want is only what we want until it's ours.
That's very profound.
Well, it's true.
I'm not a fan of the band.
No, I just...
love their lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm not a fan, because I do like their songs. Mm-hmm. I like their music.
Very talented.
Very talented guys. I think that they're... when you talk about people who are inspiring, who I feel are actually contributing with their music, mm-hmm. because I personally, it's not just about the music, because as a poet, as a writer, same as you, mm-hmm. to me it's about the words. A lot of it is the words. For some musicians, it's only about the music. And even the Beatles are known for, you know, a lot of their lyrics were just because they sounded musically good. They weren't so much about, let's pick the right word or the right feeling. Mm-hmm. Let's just pick the right sounding word mm-hmm. for this particular musical space. And personally, I'm about the lyrics. To me, mm-hmm. music and lyrics are vitally important and equally important. And back in the days of Gershwin and composers like that, Artie Shaw, all of that, but back when, well, they're bands, but we're talking about when they actually had they had lyricists and they had the music, and the lyrics were considered 50% of the song.
Oh,
and
yeah.
the music was 50% of the song.
Of
so
course.
I still very strongly support lyrics, and that's why I like Train, because their lyrics are very poignant.
Oh, definitely.
And they have value, in my mind, they have value.
Agreed. I really love that band in a way that I can appreciate them poetically.
Yeah.
But I'm not a huge... okay, so here's one more.
Okay.
Okay, we're just going to hammer through a couple questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a good... I like that lyric a lot, and I'm glad that you picked that.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so here it is. I want you to pick... and this is so... everyone's a work in progress, but whatever.
Pick again.
Yeah. Here it is.
I don't like
if you could have if you okay well too bad now what is your best quality and what is your worst quality about yourself, like, and I'm not talking about things that you scrutinize yourself over, but something you're looking forward to changing, or something that you want to change, and what's something that you're really proud of yourself, like, what quality are you really proud that you have?
Well, I've changed my idea about changing in my lifetime. I've gone through I used to take business courses, and I used to teach this as well. I taught business of modeling and whatnot, and so one of the things that I learned and that I actually used to teach, when you're asked what is your worst quality, that you always, it's like a false humility. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you, well, yes, you know, my tenacity to detail can be a little bit, you know, kind of maybe a little daunting at times for some, but you know, so you know what I mean? So we can say our worst quality is something that makes, it's not really us saying it's a worst quality, because mm-hmm. it's still a good thing. Like, to have a tenacity for detail in certain jobs is a really good thing. Mm-hmm. So I want to answer that as authentically and transparently as I can, because I am different today than I was even when I was teaching these courses, and my beliefs have changed about myself and about the world around me. And one of the things that I've come to be okay with myself, I've always been my harshest critic. I've been really hard on myself for the most of my life. I grew up a perfectionist, and as a result, I would expect perfectionism around me. So that would be hard on the people who were close to me, because I was so hard on myself, and everything had to be perfect. The way I dressed, the way I looked, the work I did, how I was perceived by the world. In my mind, it was paramount that I was as close to perfect as humanly possible. And it took up a lot of my headspace. It took up a lot of my psyche. It was very challenging. And it was hard for those around me. I know, of course, when you're dealing with a perfectionist, they're as hard, on you as they are on themselves. It might appear that they're harder on you, but no, it's very damaging internally for someone going through that. It's hard for someone to be that hard on themselves. It's very, mm-hmm. it's very damaging and harmful. So I've turned around, and I've come to a place where I'm still not perfect. I recognize that. I'm not striving for perfection, so that's a good thing. But I'm not worried about it, because I don't think there is, I think imperfection is perfection. Mm-hmm. So I've redefined even myself.
Totally on the same page as you on that.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just kind of letting go of any ideas. I'm realizing the more I know, the less I know. So I'm just kind of trying to be a little kinder to myself, and as a result, obviously I'm going to be kinder to others. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I like it. Well,
there you go.
Let's have time for one more question each, okay?
All right.
So here's my question to you. I'm going to ask you one, okay?
Okay.
Last question. We love all you listeners, and I would like you to recount your earliest memory of feeling inspired.
Music. Mm-hmm. Music. And that's why I love it so much. I recognize the importance of music to all of us and for all of us here. It's also been proven, the power of music, the healing power. Studies, many studies, you know, you've got music therapists, you've got people who come out of certain states, such as Alzheimer's or whatnot, with the benefit of music bringing them back. So my music got me through my sadness. I mean, my father died when I was a young child, when I was 8 years old, and it was a very tragic death. And it was very, very difficult as an 8 year old to not have your father. Even if my parents were separated, he was still, you know, in my life, and then he wasn't. And I turned to music.
Yeah. That's really cool.
So that's what I used to spend my babysitting money on.
That's cool.
Albums.
That's neat. That's really cool.
And I started writing after that, a few years after, when I was about 11, I started creating music, my own music. I realized that I could actually write songs.
And now...
It was very freeing.
And fast forward to here, and that inspiration has got you to... January
to world fame.
11th, 2015. Yeah, there you go.
It's not why I'm here. I'm here to just be.
And that's like amazing.
Tread very lightly on the planet. So my last question to you then, Ash.
Okay.
Since I shared what you said last time about your, you know, wanting to... It was very beautiful, actually, how much you want to give to the world and not take from it. You're a wonderful soul. And... So in closing, getting back to us, because we're working together as musicians. I mean, we're very close. We're best friends. We know each other really well. We respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very close relationship. And I also believe very strongly that I've known you before. We've talked about this before. But how do you feel in this life? What is it that inspires you to continue? To go on, to move forward. What is your greatest inspiration?
Just love, family, friends, and supporting each other. I think that it's so easy to get annoyed by people's problems, and it's so annoying for people to get annoyed by people's problems and everything like that. And you just have to strip it down and just be like, this person means so much to me. This student or my parents or whoever means so much to me. That I really don't give a flying F what anyone else thinks, and that I'm going to love and support this person, and I'm going to be there because it makes me happy too. And that to me is it. It's coming together, and it's the support, and it's the kindnesses that you offer each other that make things worth living. Otherwise, you're just stuck as an empath in a world full of pain.
Antisocial.
Eating cream of wheat with your cat. That's my life. Anyway.
It is your life.
Kiss it's a tree, though. Everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us for this program. It's been wonderful insight. I get to know you more, Ash.
Yes.
And you get to know me more, and hopefully you
all
we
get love
to
you
know
guys.
Us more, too.
You're amazing, we'll and it's so love. Great. To We got a lot more musically on the horizon. We got a new YouTube channel coming out soon.
Yeah.
I will tell you more about all of that.
We'll keep you posted.
Yes.
Kiss a tree.
Kiss a tree. Goodbye.
Bye.